London is the place for me. London, this lovely city. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia, but you must come back to London City.
One grim winter evening, when it had a kind of unrealness about London, with a fog sleeping restlessly over the city and the lights showing in the blur, Moses Alueta hopped on a number 46 bus at the corner of Chepstow Road and Westbourne Grove. He wasn't in a good mood. He had to get up from a nice warm bed and come out in this nasty weather to go to Waterloo and meet a fella that he didn't even know. But he get a letter from a friend in Trinidad who say that this fella, Henry Oliver, come in by the SS Hildebrand, and if he could please meet him at the station in London and help him until he gets settled. When Moses sit down and pay his fare, he take out a white handkerchief and blow his nose. The handkerchief turned black, and Moses watch it and curse the fog. Moses vexed with himself that his heart's so soft, that he always doing something for somebody and nobody ever doing anything for him, because it looked to Moses that he hardly have time to settle in the old Britain before all sorts of fellas start coming straight to his room in the water when they land up in London from the West Indies. Boy, I never see things so, Moses tell Harris, a friend he have. I don't know these people at all, yet they come into me as if I some liaison officer, and I catching my ass as it is. How I could help them out? And this sort of thing was happening at a time when the English people started to make rab about how too much West Indians come into the country. It's not like long time when 40 or 50 straggling in, they invading the country by the hundreds. And big discussion going on in Parliament about the situation. Though the old Britain too diplomatic to do anything drastic, like stop them from coming to the mother country. Now the position have Moses uneasy. But what could Moses do when these fellas land up hopeless on the doorstep with one set of luggage? No place to sleep, no place to go. He helped them get a place to stay and tell them how to get a walk, because he used to remember how powerfully lonely he was when he was first in London and didn't know anybody or anything. And so, like a welfare officer, Moses scattering the boys around London. And one or two of them he take a fancy to. He take them around by houses he know, for Moses learn which part they will slam door in your face and which part will take in spades. When he get to Waterloo, he hop off, and right away, in that big station, he had a feeling of homesickness that he never felt in the 9-10 years he in this country. But the old Waterloo is a place of arrival and departure. It's a place where you see people crying goodbye and kissing welcome. And he hardly have time to sit down before this feeling of nostalgia hit him, and he was surprised. It have some fellas who in Britain long, and yet they can't get away from the habit of going there to watch their countrymen coming off the boat train. And sometimes they might spot somebody they know. But Moses, he never into that sort of slackness. Still, the station is a place where you have a soft feeling. It was here that Moses did land when he come to London. And he have no doubt that when the time come, if it ever come, it would be here he would say goodbye to the big city. Perhaps he was thinking, it's time to go back to the tropics. That's why he feeling sort of lonely and miserable. Moses was sitting there on a bench, smoking a woods, when a Jamaican friend named Tolroy come up. "Boy, I expect my mother to come," Tolroy say in a nervous way, as if he frightened at the idea. "You send for she?" Moses say. "Yes." Tolroy sit down on the bench with Moses, and the two of them watching Waterloo Station, all the things that happening, all the people that coming and going. It had a Jamaican fella who living in Brixton that come to the station to see what tenants he could pick up. This test, when he did first come, open up a club, and by he save up money and buy out a whole street of houses and let out rooms to the boys, hitting them anything like 3 or 4 guineas for a double. Sometimes he put bed and chair in two or three big room and tell the fellas they could live in there together. 5-6 fellas in one room and the test coining money for so. And whenever a boat train come in, he hustled to pick up them fellas, telling them how Brixton is a nice area, that it have plenty of Jamaicans down there already, and they would feel at home in the district. While Moses smiling to see the test hustling tenants, Torrod gone down by the bottom of the train, stumbling over suitcase and baggage as he trying to see everybody what coming off the train at the same time. A old woman, who looked like she would dead any minute, come out of her carriage, carrying a cardboard box and a paper bag. After she, a young girl come, carrying a flower bag filled up with things. Then a young man wearing a wide brim hat and a jacket falling below the knees. Then a little boy and a little girl. Then another old woman, tottering so much, a guard had to help she get out of the train. Oh, Jesus Christ, Talroy say. What is this at all?
Talroy, the first woman say. You don't know your own mother?
Talroy hug his mother like a man in a daze. Then he say, but what Tanty Bessie doing here, ma? And Agnes? And Louis? And the two children?
All are we come, Talroy?
Ma say, when you write home to say you're getting £5 a week, and you know how old your Tanty getting,
Talroy is a shame to leave she alone to die in Kingston, with nobody to look after she.
Talroy start to shiver with a kind of fright.
Talroy,
Ma say,
you remember when you was a little boy? How you used to live at Tanty? And she used to mind you and send you to school and give you tea and bake in the evening? Tanty give you shoes to wear and pants to put on your backside. How you expect me to leave Tanty behind when all the family go into England?
All the family stand up there arguing. For Talroy ain't catch himself yet. He can't realize that all these people on his hands, in London, in the grim winter, are no place to go to stay. A journalist fella see this small crowd, and he figured that it looked like he might get a good story from them. So he went up to Tanty and say, excuse me, lady, I'm from the Echo. Is this your first trip to England?
Don't tell that man nothing, Talroy growled.
Why are you so prejudiced?
Tanty say.
The gentleman asked me a good question. Why I shouldn't answer?
And she turned to the reporter and say,
yes, mister. It's my first trip. My nephew Talroy here. And so he sent for the rest of the family to come and live with him. Talroy is a good boy,
Tanty say.
I mind him since he was small.
Yes, the reporter say. But can you tell me why so many people are leaving Jamaica and coming to England?
It's the same thing I say,
Tanty say excited.
I tell all of them who come in, why won't you leave the country to go to England? Over there is so cold that only white people does live there.
But they say that it have more work in England. And to tell you the truth, when I hear Talroy getting £5 a week, I had to agree. Tell me, madam, what will you do in London?
Who, me?
Tanty look around as if the reporter talking to somebody else.
Why, all of them was coming, so I had to come too to look after them. Who will cook and wash the clothes and clean the house?
This time, Ma pulling Tanty's hand to make she stop talking, but Tanty only shaking off the hand.
What happened to you?
Tanty tell Ma.
You can't see this gentleman from the newspaper come to meet me by the station? We have to show that we have good manners, you know.
May I take a picture of you? The reporter asked.
What? Tanty say. You can't take me alone. You have to take the whole family.
And she went to round them up.
Wait a minute,
Tanty tell the reporter. And she begin to open up a cardboard box right there on the platform. And she take out a straw hat with a wide brim and put it on she head.
I ready now,
she say, posing with the family. The next day, when the Echo appear, it had a picture, and under the picture write, now Jamaican families come to Britain. While all this confusion happening, Moses killing himself with laugh. But as all the people begin to go away, and he can't see this Henry Oliver, he just making up his mind to go home, when he spot a Tess straggling up the platform.
He have a feeling that this couldn't be the fella. For the Tess have on an old grey tropical suit and a pair of washy kong, and no overcoat or muffler or gloves or anything for the cold. So Moses Shaw is some Tess who living in London a long, long time and accustomed to the beast winter. The fella, as soon as he see Moses, walk straight up to him and say, "Ah, I bet you is Moses. Frank did say you would come to meet me in Waterloo. My name, Henry Oliver." "You're not feeling the cold, old man?" Moses say, eyeing the specimen with amazement, for he himself have on long wool underwear and a heavy fireman coat that he pick up in Portobello Road. "No," Henry say, looking surprised. "This is the way the weather does be in the winter. It's not so bad, man. In fact, I'm feeling a little warm." "What happened to you? You sick or something?" Moses say, "You must be have on bags of wool under that suit. You can't fool an old Tess like me." "What you making so much fuss about?" Henry say, opening his shirt to show bare skin underneath. "This is a nice climate, boy. You feeling cold?" "Take it easy," Moses say, deciding to wait and see how things would develop with this strange character. "Get your luggage and we will go. Tonight, you could stay by me. But tomorrow, I might shift from my room and go upstairs, and I will see if I could fix up with the landlord. You take my room." "Whenever you're ready," Henry say. "I ain't have any luggage. I figure it's no sense to load up myself with a set of things. When I start to work, I will buy some things." Now Moses is a veteran, who living in this country for a long time, and he meet all sorts of people and do all sorts of things. But he never thought the day would come when a fella would land up from the sunny tropics on a powerful winter evening wearing a tropical suit and saying that he ain't have no luggage. "You mean you come from Trinidad with nothing?" "Well, the old toothbrush always in the pocket." Henry pat the jacket pocket. "And I have on a pair of pajamas. Don't worry. I will get fixed up as soon as I start to work."
"Nobody tell you anything at all about London? Frank can give you some tips before you leave Trinidad?"
"Oh, he tell me a lot of things. But you know how them fellas always like to exaggerate. And I only listen to him halfway."
"All right, Sir Galahad," Moses say. "Take it easy. London will do for you before long. Come, we will catch the tube as you don't have any luggage."
Thus it was that Henry Oliver Esquire, alias Sir Galahad, descend on London to swell the population by one.
Don Warrington was reading The Lonely Londoners by Sam Selvan. It was abridged in 5 parts by Loris Morgan Griffiths and produced by Sarah Davis. And tomorrow...
This is BBC Radio 4 Extra.
More now in our other reading for this week. With Attitudes and Language of Its Time, it's Sam Selvon's powerful 1956 novel of The Lonely Londoners. It follows Moses Alouetta and his fellow Caribbean immigrants as they navigate the challenges of life in London, forging a community and finding strength amidst the cold weather and unwelcoming environment. In part two, Moses, who's been in London for nearly 10 years, has just met Galahad off the boat train at Waterloo. Don Warrington is the reader.
London is the place for me. London, this lovely city. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia, but you must come back to London City.
On the way back in the tube, Moses had to admit that it looked as if Galahad have a lot of guts. The way how he getting on, the way how he land without any luggage. And Moses still amazed how he stand in the cold without no winter clothes. Galahad say, "Which part you live in?" "In the water.
Bayswater to you until you're living in the city for at least 2 years. When they get to the water, Moses hurry him home because the fog like it getting thicker and it making cold too bad. Sir Galahad look around in Moses' room. What is that in the corner? A gas fire. You have a shilling change on you? Moses have a shilling. But he have a feeling that if he don't tap the Galahad early, he would never be able to do it later on. Galahad hand Moses a shilling and watch him put it in the slot in the meter and light the gas. First thing Galahad say is, you can't put in a piece of lead shaped like a shilling instead. Frank say he used to do that. Take it easy, Moses say. All these questions you're asking is good questions, but you will find out for yourself before long. That small fire does keep the room warm? Yes, Moses say. But if I get the room I expect upstairs, you can stay here, and you wouldn't need to put it on, seeing that winter is like high noon to you. Moses heat up a pot of rice and peas, and they eat. Moses keeping quiet, because he don't want to crank up the old Galahad, who look as if he liked to talk a lot. But when they finish eating, he get in a better mood, and he decide to make the position clear. Listen, he say, you can stay here tonight, but tomorrow, if the landlord don't agree for you to have this room, you will have to find a place. And also you have to look for work. Every man on his own here. It ain't have no shit over here like both of we Trinidadians, and we must help out one another. London's not Port of Spain. Don't ask many questions, and you will find out a lot. I don't usually talk to fellas like this, but I take a fancy to you. May blood take you. Tell me, what you used to do before you come? I was working Point of Pierre in the oil fields, Galahad say, living down south, San Fernando, in Mucarapo Street. And old Moses start to get nostalgia now that he have a friend who just arrived from Trinidad. And the two of them talk a long time until they feel sleepy. Galahad put two chairs together and fall asleep right away. The next morning, Moses get up about 9:30 and wash face and scrub teeth and comb hair. And still Galahad was sleeping with a smile on his face. Moses shake him rough. Get up, man! It's time to go and look for work. This is not a holiday camp. It have a kind of fella who does never like people to think that they unaccustomed to anything or that they are strangers in a place. From the very beginning, they ought to give you the impression that they hep, that they on the ball, that nobody could tie them up. Sir Galahad was a fella like that, and he was trying hard to give Moses the feeling that he could take care of himself, that he don't want help for anything. So that same morning when they finish eating, Moses tell him that he would go with him to help him find a walk. But Galahad say, don't worry, man. I will make up for myself. I could save you some trouble. You don't know this place, boy, Moses say. Work not so easy to get as you think. All right, Mr. London, Galahad say. What would you advise me as a newcomer to do? Moses say, what I will tell you is this. Take it easy. It had a time when I was first here, when it only had a few West Indians in London, and things used to go good enough. These days, spades all over the place, and every shipload is big news, and the English people don't like the boys coming to England to work and live. Why is that? Galahad asked. Well, as far as I could figure, they frightened that we get jobs in front of them, though that does never happen. The other thing is that they just don't like black people. And don't ask me why, because that is a question that bigger brains than mine trying to find out from way back. Things as bad over here as in America? Galahad asked. That is a point the boys always debating, Moses say. The thing is, in America, they don't like you and they tell you so straight, so that you know how you stand. Over here is the old English diplomacy. Thank you, sir. And how do you do? When you go in the hotel or the restaurant, they will politely tell you to haul or else give you the cold treatment. I know fellas like you, Galahad say in turn. You all live in a place for some time and you think you know all about it. And when any green fella turn up, you try to frighten them. If things bad like that,
How come you still holding on in Britain? You don't believe me, eh? Listen, Moses say, there's a restaurant run by a Pole in a place called Ipswich. Go and see if they will serve you. And you know the hurtful part of it? We is British subjects and he's only a foreigner. We have more right than any people from the damn continent to live and work and enjoy what this country have. Because it's we who bleed to make this country prosperous.
Well, look, Galahad say, we could stay here talking all day, but I better go and look for work. Where you have to go to?
The employment exchange by Edgware Road. You will have a lot of company there. You shouldn't feel lonely.
I did hear some fellas talking on the train about how you could go on the dole if you ain't working and how they intend to find out about it before they start the hustle.
It have some fellas like that, Moses say. You want to be like that?
Sir Galahad hesitate, like if he thinking. Then he say, no. If I can't get electrician work, I will take something else for the time being. I'm new in this country, and I don't want to start answering on the state unless I have to. Me, I'm a born hustler.
I wish it had plenty other fellas like you, Moses say. A lot of parasites muddy the water for the boys. With that, Moses starts shining his shoes, and Sir Galahad make for the tube station. He stand up there on Queensway, watching everybody going about their business, and a feeling of loneliness and fright come on him. He forget all the brave words he was talking to Moses, and he realized that here he is, in London, and he have money or work or any friend or anything, and he's standing up watching people. And everybody looked so busy, he frightened to ask questions from any of them. On top of that, it's one of those winter mornings when a kind of fog hovering around. The sun shining, but Galahad never see the sun look like how it looking now. No heat in it. It just there in the sky like a force ripe orange. When he look up, the color of the sky so desolate, it make him more frightened. By and by, he drift down to Whiteley's. Suddenly, he wonder if he could find his way back to Moses' room. Suppose he get lost. In the panic, he start to pat pocket to make sure he have money on him. And a feeling come over him as if he lost everything he have.
You're getting on like a damn fool, he tell himself. What happened to you? All of a sudden like you gone stupid?
Take it easy, he say, unconsciously repeating Moses' advice. You're new to this place. It will take you some time to settle in. But the pep talk ain't do much to help. And he nearly dead with joy when he look up the road and see Moses coming.
Moses, he say, I glad to see you, boy. If you don't mind, I want you to come with me.
I thought so, Moses say. Boy, you're lucky I have soft heart. And he take Galahad to the bus queue. When the bus come, Galahad pushing in front of the other people, though Moses tried to hold him back, and the conductor say, yeah, you can't break the queue like that, mate. And Galahad had to watch all the people who was there before him get on the bus, and an old lady look at him with a loud tone in her eye, and a girl tell a fella she was with, they have to learn to do better, you know. I tell you to take it easy, Moses say when they was in the bus. You're not in Park Street waiting for a trolley? When they get to the building that marked Ministry of Labour, Galahad see it had a lot of notice box with glass window on the walls with all kinds of vacancies pinned in them. Like plenty job going, he tell Moses. Inside, there are a lot of other tests sitting around. Moses tell Galahad to go to the desk that mark inquiries and tell the clerk he want a job.
What work can you do?
The clerk ask him.
Electrician,
Galahad say.
Electrician,
the clerk say to himself, and he looked through some papers. We haven't got anything for you at the moment. Go to the next building and register, and get your insurance card, please. Moses take him round to the next building. When they enter, a kind of atmosphere hit Galahad hard. so that he had to stand up against the wall. It ain't have no place in the world where a lot of men get together to look for work and draw money from the welfare state while they ain't working. It's a kind of place where hate and disgust and avarice and malice and sympathy and sorrow and pity all mix up. In the world today, a job is all the security a man have. A job mean place to sleep, food to eat, cigarette to smoke. And even though it have the welfare state in the background, when a man out of work, he like a fish out of water, gasping for breath. Was a long room that Galahad see, shaped like an L. Fellas stand up in little groups here and there, all of them looking destitute and poor me one, the floor dirty with footprints and cigarette butt. Now, Moses say, on all the records of the boys, you will see mark on the top in red ink, J-A, col dot. That mean you're from Jamaica and you're black. So that put the clerks in the know right away. Suppose a vacancy come and they want to send a fella. First, they will find out if the firm want colored fellas before they send you. That save a lot of time and body, you see. In the beginning, it caused a lot of trouble when fellas went saying that they come from the labor office and the people send them away saying it ain't have no vacancy. They don't tell you outright that they don't want colored fellas. They just say, sorry, the vacancies get filled. But this office here ain't so bad. On the whole, they treat you decent. And so, between Moses and the labor office, Galahad get fixed up. When they was outside, and Galahad showing him the unemployment card, he asked, you think I will get a work? Sure. When you come back to report, tell them you will take anything for the time being. And Galahad, like Moses, pick up a night work, because it had more money in it. He wasn't doing electrician, but with overtime, he grossing about 10 pounds. So Galahad happy. Why worry?
The Lonely Londoners by Sam Selvon was read by Don Warrington, abridged by Loris Morgan Griffiths and produced by Sarah Davies. And the story continues tomorrow at the same time.
On BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Californian rapper Dr. Dre owns 7 thoroughbred racehorses. His most successful horse to date is a filly named Straight Outta Kempton.
A new series.
Remedy.
London is the place for me. London, this lovely city. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia, but you must come back to London City.
Tolroy eventually get the family settled. The place where they live in was off the Harrow Road, and the people in that area called the working class. Wherever in London that it have working class, there you will find a lot of spades. This is the real world, where men know what it is to hustle a pong to pay the rent when Friday come. The houses around here, old and grey and weather-beaten. It don't have no hot water. And in the whole street that Tolroy and them living in, none of the houses have bath. You have to buy one of them big galvanized basin and boil the water and fill it up, or else go to the public bath. Some of the houses still had gas light. All the houses in a row in the street, on both sides. So your house jam up between two neighbors. It's so most of the houses is in London. It always have little children playing in the road. They just draw hopscotch blocks on the pavement. And some of the walls of the buildings have signs painted like Vote Labour and Down with the Tories. It have people living in London who don't know what's happening in the room next to them, far more the street. London is a place like that. It divided up in little worlds, and you stay in the world you belong to, and you don't know anything about what happened in the other ones except what you read in the papers. It have a kind of communal feeling with the working class and the spades. Because when you're poor, things does level out. It don't have much up and down. The bottom of the street, it had a sweet shop, a bakery, a grocery, a butcher and a fish and chips. At the top, where it joined the Harrow Road, it had all kind of thing. Shop, store, butcher, greengrocer, trolley and bus stop. The grocery at the bottom of the street was like a shop in the West Indies. It had brasso to shine brass, and you could get blue for when you're washing clothes, and the fella selling pitch oil to put in cheap oil burner. The shop also have wick, in case the wick in your burner go bad, and it have wood cut up in little bundles to start coal fire. Before Jamaicans start to invade Britain, it was a hell of a thing to pick up a piece of salt fish anywhere, or to get things like pepper sauce or dashin or even garlic. But now, today is no trouble at all to get salt fish and rice. The Tess who had the grocery, from the time spades start to settle in the district, he find out what sort of thing they like to eat, and he stock up with things like black-eyed peas and red beans and pepper sauce and tin breadfruit and okra and smoked herring. And as long as the spade's spending money, he don't care. In fact, his big encouragement, "Good morning, sir." And, "What can I do for you today, sir?" And, "Do come again." And all over London have places like that now. It have a tailor shop in the East End near Aldgate Station, what owned by a Cockney fella. Well, Papa, when you go there on a Saturday, you can't find place to stand up because the place full up with spades and the fella passing round cigars free to everybody. Cigars is on Saturday. If you lime during the week, he give you cigarettes. It's a small shop, and on the walls have photo of all the black boxers in the world, and photo of any presentation or function what have spades in it. Well, Tante used to shop in this grocery every Saturday morning. It must be like a jam session there when all the spade housewives go to buy, and Tante in the lead. They getting on just as if they're in the marketplace back home. "Yes, child, as I was telling you, she did lose the baby. 1/2 pound salt fish, please." "Yes, as I was telling you." "And 1/2 pound red beans." "No, not that one. That one in the bag in the corner." Tante liked the shop and the chance to meet other women and gossip. For it I have no woman like stand up and talk other people business like Big Mouth Tante. And it didn't take she long to make friend and enemy with everybody in the district. She become a familiar figure to everybody, and even the English people calling she Tante. It was Tante who caused the shopkeeper to give people credit. It had a big picture hanging up on the wall of the shop with two fellas in it. One is Mr. Credit, and he's surrounded with unpaid bills, and he thin and worried, with his hand propping up his head. The other is Mr. Cash, and he have on waistcoat with gold chain and have a big belly, and he laughing and looking prosperous. Tante used to look at the picture and suck she teeth. One day, she asked the shopkeeper if he don't know about trust. "Trust," the shopkeeper say. "Yes," Tante say. "Where I come from, you take what you want and you pay every Friday." "Oh, credit," the shopkeeper say, as if he pleased that he understand Tante. "We don't do business like that in this shop." And he pointed to the picture on the wall. "But you should," Tante say. "We is poor people, and we don't always have money to buy." Tante keep behind the shopkeeper to trust, but he only smile when she tell him. Then one day, Tante buy a set of message and put it in she bag and tell him, "You see that exercise book in the glass case? Take one out and put my name in it and keep it under the counter with how much I owe you. And I will pay you on Friday, please God." And Tante walk out of the white people's shop, brazen as ever. When the Friday come, she pay what she owe. "I will only give you credit," the shopkeeper say to humor Tante. But before long, she spread the ballad all about that. And the fella get a list of creditors on his hands. However, every Friday evening religiously, they all paying up. And as business going on all right, he decide to give in. He take down the picture and put up one of the coronation of the Queen. Everybody in the district get to know Tanti so well that she's doing as she like. You know how them greengrocers and barrow boys don't want you to touch their goods at all because they put all the good things in front to make sure and give all the rotten and bad ones from behind. Well, Tanti ain't have none of that. I want that cabbage, Tanti does say, and pull a big one out from in front, and all the others it was propping up fall down. No, no, give me tomatoes from in front, she say, when fellas taking rotten ones from behind to sell. If anybody else get on so, even English people, is big trouble. But with Tanti, is all right. She tried to spread the credit business on the Harrow Road, but them proprietors was different than the fella in the back street. Like how some people live in small village and never go to the city, so Tanti settled down in the Harrow Road in the working class area. When Ma come home from work, she used to ask about the outside world, and Ma would tell she about Tube Train and Piccadilly Circus, and how life's so busy that if you don't watch out, a car knock you down and you're dead in the road. Why you don't take a tube and go and see the big stores it have in Oxford Street, Ma say. But Tanti shakes she head. I too old for that now. It don't matter to me. I will stay here by the Harrow Road. But all the same, it rankled Tanti that she never travel in tube or bus in London. And she make up she mind secretly to go if she get the chance. And she have a good reason. Ma had this work at a Lion's Corner house. She washed cup and spoon and dish and glass for £5 a week. Ma work in the back, but she was near enough to the front to see what happening outside of the kitchen. She get to know the regular faces, and she get to know cup and dirty dish and spoon like she never know before. All the wares used to come from a square hole where the attendants pushed them. Only from washing up, Ma form an idea of the population of London. Well, one morning, Ma forget and went to work with the key to open the cupboard what had all the rations in it. Tolroy was out, and Tanti alone in the house. She tried to pick the lock, but it's one of them yay lock, and she couldn't manage. Tanti was waiting for a good excuse to travel out of the district, and she decided to brave London and go to this place where Ma working to get the keys. She put on the old fireman coat that Tolroy did get for her, and she tied a piece of coloured cloth on her head, and she went out to the Harrow Road. Tanti did hear how everybody saying that if you want to find out something, you must ask a policeman. So, though she see plenty of people, she ignored them and looked for a policeman. She didn't see one till she reached by the Prince of Wales. You could tell me where Greatport Street is, please? The policeman scratched his head. Are you sure of the name? You don't mean Great Portland Street? Yes, that's it, Tanti say. The number 18B bus goes there, the policeman say. The conductor will tell you where to get off. I don't like these buses they have in London, Tanti say. They're too tall. I feel as if they would capsize. What about the tube train? You could walk down to Westbourne Park Station, the policeman say, smiling. I won't have to change, Tanti getting frightened now at the idea. No, I don't think so. Thank you very much, Tanti say. Though Tanti never went on the tube, she was like those people who feel familiar with a thing just by reading about it and hearing about it. But was plenty different when she finds herself in the station, and the idea of going under the ground in this train nearly makes she turn back. But the thought that she would never be able to say she went made her carry on. Eventually, Tanti did get to the place where Ma working after asking questions all the way. She went straight into the place and she peeped through the square hole and she see Ma washing dish. Ma, she called out, you had me in one set of confusion this morning. You left with the key to the cupboard and it didn't have nothing to cook. Come round here in the back, Ma say, frightened that Tanti stand up there talking so loud and all the customers looking at she. No, child, Tanti say, just give me the key and I will go. You best do the white people work and don't stop. Ma come and give Tanti the key and ask she how she get to the place. I come by tube, Tanti say, cool, as if she traveling every day. How else you think? But are going back by bus. Stay and eat a food, as you hear already. Ma say, what? Eat this English food when I have peas and rice waiting home to cook? You must be mad. And Tanti went away, feeling good that she make the trip from Harrow Road at last. I hope this bus don't turn over, she tell the conductor, because it didn't have room below and she had to go upstairs. She was so frightened that she didn't bother to look out of the window and see anything. And when she get off at the Prince of Wales, she feel relieved. Now, nobody could tell she that she end travel by bus and tube in London. London, that's the way for me.
Galahad goes hunting when Don Warrington reads the next part of The Lonely Londoners by Sam Selvan at the same time tomorrow. It was abridged by Loris Morgan Griffiths and the producer was Sarah Davies.
Where is Florence?
Signora promised us two south-facing rooms with a view of the Arno.
An Italian holiday.
You can have our rooms and we'll have yours.
Breaking free of Edwardian restraint.
With luck, we too shall have an adventure.
You must excuse me, my dear, I really...
Lives of a group of Caribbean immigrants in London. Containing language of its time, in The Lonely Londoners today, Galahad is getting on well in London. In fact, he sometimes feels like a king as he strolls through the park with £3 or £4 in his pocket, sporting sharp clothes and off to meet a new girl under the clock in Piccadilly Tube Station. But there's a darker side to the city, and a hungrier one, that prompts Galahad into a high-risk exploit. Don Warrington reads the penultimate episode of The Lonely Londoners.
London is the place for me.
When that first London summer hit Galahad, he began to feel so cold that he had to get an overcoat. Moses laughed like hell. You're warm in the winter and cold in the summer, eh? Ha! Well, it's my turn now to put on my light suit and cruise about. But for all that, Galahad getting on well in the city. He had a way. Whenever he talking with the boys, he using the names of the places like they mean big romance. As if to say, I was in Oxford Street. Have more prestige than if he just say, I was up the road. Boy, when he say, Charing Cross, when he realized that is he, Sir Galahad, who going there. Just to say Charing Cross have a lot of romance in it. Lord, that is life for you. That is it. To meet a craft there and take she out someplace. What you think, Moses? Ah, in you I see myself. How I was when I was new to London. All them places is like nothing to me now. It's like when you're back home and you hear fellas talk about Times Square and Fifth Avenue, Charing Cross and Gay Paris. You say to yourself, Lord, them places must be sharp. Then you get a chance and you see them for yourself and it's like nothing. But Galahad feel like a king living in London. The first time he take a craft out, he dress up good. For one of the first things he do after he get a night walk was to stock up with clothes like stupidness, as if to make up for all the hard times when he didn't have nice things to wear. So, cool as a lord, the old Galahad walking out, with plastic raincoat hanging on the arm, and eyes not missing one sharp craft that pass, bowing his head in a polite good evening, and not giving a blast if they answer or not. It's one of those summer evenings when it looked like night would never come. A magnificent evening. Rent finished paying, rations in the cupboard, £20 in the bank, and a nice piece of skin waiting under the big clock in Piccadilly Tube Station. Mummy, Look at that black man. A little child, holding on to the mother's hand, look up at Sir Galahad. You mustn't say that, dear, the mother chided the child. But Galahad's skin like rubber at this stage. He bent down and pat the child's cheek, and the child cower and shrink and begin to cry. What a sweet child, Galahad say, putting on the old English accent. What's your name? But the child mother uneasy. She pulled the child along and she looked at Galahad and gave a sickly sort of smile. And the old Galahad, knowing how it is, smile back and walk on. If that episode did happen around the first time when he land up in London, oh Lord, he would have run to the boys, telling them he have big ballad. But at this stage, Galahad like duck back when rain fall, everything running off. Though it used to have times when he lay down there on the bed in the basement room in the water, and all the experience like that come to him. And he say, Lord, what it is we people do in this world that we have to suffer so? What it is we want that white people find it so hard to give? A little work, a little food, a little place to sleep. We not asking for the sun or the moon. We only want to get by. We don't even want to get on. And Galahad would take his hand from under the blanket as he lay there, studying how the night before he was in the lavatory and two white fellas come in and say, how these black bastards have the lavatory dirty. And they didn't know he was there. And when he come out, they say, hello, mate, have a cigarette. And Galahad watched the color of his hand and talked to it as if it's a person, saying, color, is you that causing all this misery in the world? It's not me, it's you. It's not we the people don't like. Is the color black? Look at you. You're so black and innocent. And this time so, you're causing misery all over the world. Anyway, all thought like that out of Galahad's mind as he out on this summer evening, walking down the Bayswater Road on his way to the circus. He go into the gardens, and Galahad Esquire strolling through, 3-4 pounds in the pocket, sharp clothes on, Lord, oh Lord, going to meet a first-class craft that waiting for him in the circus. Always, from the first time he went there to see Eros and the lights, that circus have a magnet for him. That circus represent life. Every time he go there, he have the same feeling like when he see it the first night. Drink Coca-Cola. Anytime is Guinness time. A million flashing lights, the wide doors of theatres, people sitting and standing and walking and talking and laughing, and Galahad Esquire in all this, standing there in the big city in London. Oh, Lord! He went down the steps into the station, and Daisy was dressed up plenty. She looked real sharp in a coloured pattern dress, which looked pretty. And when he was coming up, he noticed the trim legs and the straight lines of the nylons and the high heel shoes. He walked up behind her and put his hands over she eyes. And that evening, people in the tube station must be bawl to see a black man so familiar with a white girl. But Galahad feeling too good to bother about the loud tones in them people's eyes. Tonight is his night. Daisy move his hands and say, oh, it's you. And she looked a little embarrassed, but Galahad didn't notice. They went to the hippodrome that showing the gladiator, starring Victor Mature, and Galahad feeling good with this piece of skin walking with him. After the picture, they went to a restaurant and eat a big meal, and Galahad buy a bottle of French wine, telling the waiter to bring the best. The summer night descend with stars. They walk in hand, and Galahad feeling hearts. It was a lovely evening, Daisy began. Come and go in the yard, Galahad say. What? Daisy say. The yard, where I live in. Daisy start to hesitate, but he make haste and catch a number 12, telling she that it's on the way home. When they hop off by the water, she was still getting on prim, but Galahad know, was only grand charge,
and besides, the old blood getting hot. So he walked Daisy brisk down the road, and she quiet as a mouse. It was battle royal in that basement, man, he tell Moses afterwards. And he went on to give a lot of detail, though all of that is nothing to an old veteran like Moses. It's only to Galahad is new, because it's the first time with a white number. Moses smile, a knowing smile. Take it easy, he tells Sir Galahad. It had one bitter season, winter, when it looked like the vengeance of Moko fall on all the boys in London. Nobody get any work. Fellas who had work, losing it. And all over the place, it looked like if Operation Pressure gone into execution in a big way. Galahad, for one, loses work. And though it was winter, a real grim one with pipes bursting, the old Galahad not very much affected by the weather. Some miracle of metabolism was still keeping him warm, as he was able to walk about the streets when normal people rattling with cold in an ordinary suit of clothing. Fellas put him down for mad. Some of them stare at this spade who defying the elements as if he's a witch doctor. That particular winter, things were so bad with him that he had to try and catch a pigeon in the park to eat. It does have a lot of them flying about, and the people does feed them with bits of bread. Watching these fat pigeons strut about Kensington Gardens, the thought come to Galahad to snatch one and take it home and roast it. Once the idea come to his head, he began to go to the park regularly to study pigeon life and plan out a strategy. Galahad wasn't so much frightened of the idea of the snatch as what would happen if one of them animal-loving people see him. That thought made him shiver. And the morning he was in action, he looked around carefully to make sure nobody near. Coo, coo, Galahad say, throwing bread and leaning on the rail. The pigeons say, and they start to flutter around as Galahad threw bread. Galahad eye a fat fella who edging up to the railing. He start to drop bread a little nearer until the bird was close. He made the snatch so quietly that the other pigeons only flutter around a little and went on eating. He start to swing the pigeon around, holding it by the head, for he want to kill it quick and push it in his pocket. Just as Galahad swinging the pigeon, one of them old geezers who does always wear fur coat come through the entrance with little Flossie on a lead to give the little deer a morning constitution. And as soon as Flossie spot the spade, she start a sharp barking. Oh, you cruel, cruel beast, the woman say, and Galahad head fly back from where he kneeling on the ground to handle the situation better. You cruel monster, you killer. Galahad blood run cold. He see the gallows before him right away, and he push the pigeon in his jacket pocket and stand up, the pigeon still fluttering in the pocket. I must find a policeman, the woman screech. And as she turned back to the road, Galahad make races through the park, heading down for Lancaster Gate. Now, when Galahad did reach back home, and he sit down and start to pick the bird feather, he start to feel guilty. All he tried to argue with himself that he only do it because he hungry and things brown. Still, the feeling that he'd do a bad thing wouldn't leave him. What the hell I care, he say to himself. So much damn pigeon all about the place. What the hell happen if I snatch one to eat? But when he finished plucking the pigeon, conscience humbugging him so much that he fling it in a corner. Little later, he thought about Moses. Moses in this country long, he say to himself. And if he could eat it, I don't see why I must feel so guilty. So he went round by Moses, and he tell Moses all what happened. Boy, you take a big chance, Moses say. You think this is Trinidad? Them pigeons there to beautify the park, not to eat. The people over here will kill you if you touch a fly. But all the same, the old Moses eyeing the bird, and it's a nice fat one. Well, clean it and cut it up, he say. I will put the rice on to boil. But you mustn't do this kind of thing again. You will get in big trouble. The old geezer called me a cruel monster,
Galahad say. If you did see she face, you would think I commit a murder. You're lucky they didn't catch you. It's a long time I eat pigeon, boy. Galahad say. Pigeon meat, really sweet, Moses say. In about an hour, they were eating pigeon and rice, Galahad sucking the bones and smacking his lips. You have a cigarette? He asked Moses when he finished. The pigeon and rice have Moses feeling good and he in the mood for an old talk. And he and Galahad sit there, belly full with pigeon, smoking cigarette and talking about them characters back home.
And tomorrow, in the final part of The Lonely Londoners, as summer comes to the city, Moses' friend Harris organises a dance and Moses contemplates his life after 10 years in London. And you might like to know that after the weekend at this time, following on from The Lonely Londoners, we've the first part of Colin McInnes's vibrant novel Absolute Beginners, which is set just a couple of years later as racial tensions rise. Together, the two books offer an unforgettable portrait of a city and a society undergoing convulsive change. And, of course, you'll be able to find both of those on BBC Sounds. BBC Radio 4 Extra presents Faust, a reworking of the classic tale of a man who sells his soul to the devil. The starry cast includes Mark Gatiss as Mephistopheles and Julian Rhyne-Tutt as Faust. In this darkly comic adaptation, the man and the demon begin their Faustian pact.
Please allow me to introduce myself. Mephistopheles is the name.
You gave me a fright. How did you get in here? What is your business?
A devil out of hell is who I am. No ordinary devil either, I like to think. I can't open my wings in here. I'd take your knick-knacks off the shelves just like that. But you'll have to believe me, they're very impressive. Grey-blue tinted iron feathers beaten so thin they ripple as the hot air rises from the oven.
I asked about your business.
I have a certain license from my master. He extends me privileges, the right to roam up here, to observe and be diverted as I see fit, provided, naturally, there's something in it for him at the end of the day.
You knew I tried calling up spirits.
Of course. I was out on the prowl, looking for some diversion when I heard your summons. As soon as I saw you, I knew I'd found just what I needed to keep me entertained for a while.
Mark Gatiss and Julian Rhyne-Tutt star in Faust, starting next Monday night at 9:45 on Radio 4 Extra and BBC Sounds.
This is
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 7:30. Good morning from me, David Miles, with humour right through to 10. In a moment, there's a sermon on the rocks for the unbelievers of the Isles of Scilly. Warmington-on-Sea is our destination after that for the very first Dad's Army for Radio, which finds Captain Mannering assembling his motley crew for the Home Guard at 8. Then we're heading down under to the remote Australian town of Kalangadog Junction, where Dr. Thomas has no patience but an invitation to judge a baby contest at 8:30. And now we continue our 1930s comedy set on the remote Scilly Island of St. Martin's, just before the Second World War, where Father Tregarthen is enlisting the help of an unlikely source to help him with his irreligious parishioners.
Heading the wrong way for church, Mr. Trenier.
That's the idea, Reverend.
But you need to pray to make amends.
I got work once doing. And anyway, don't reckon I got too much to make amends for.
We're all sinners, Tommy.
Well, you too?
Though you're clearly a greater sinner than me.
Say a prayer for me. How about that?
I will not.
If I only sinned a little bit since Sunday last, maybe the good Lord might not.
On BBC Radio 4.
Why have we stopped?
High drama, Mr. Beam.
Available now on BBC Sounds.
Yeah.
This is
BBC Radio 4
Extra.
Next, we have the final chapter of Sam Selvon's classic 1956 novel about the lives of a group of Caribbean immigrants in London. As summer arrives, Moses' friend Harris organises a dance, and Moses contemplates his life after 10 years in the capital. With language of the time, Don Warrington reads The Lonely Londoners.
Is the place for me.
Oh, what a time it is when summer come to the city, and all them girls wearing light summer frocks, and you could course a lime in the park and negotiate 10 shillings or a pound with the sports. Everywhere you turn, the English people smiling. Isn't it a lovely day? As if the sun burn away all the tightness and strain that was in their faces. Don't ever be surprised at who you meet up cruising and reclining in the park. It might be your boss, or it might be some big professional fella, because it may have no discrimination in the park. Summer does really be hearts. Every year, the ranks augmented with fresh blood. Lately, in view of the big set of West Indians that storm in Britain, it have a lot of dark women who in the racket. It have some white fellas who feel it's a big thrill to hit a black number, and the girls does make them pay big money. But as far as spades hitting spades, it have nothing like that, for a spade wouldn't hit a spade when it have so much other talent on parade. People wouldn't believe you when you tell them the things that happen. The cruder you are, the more the girls like you. They don't want you to play la-di-da or try to be polite and civilized. They want you to live up to the films and stories they hear about black people living primitive in the jungles of the world. That is why you will see so many of them African fellas in the city with scar on their face and a ferocious expression going about with some real sharp chicks. One night at a party in Knightsbridge, bags of women and fellas drinking champagne, Moses sit wondering how the English feel they can't get big thrills unless they have a black man in the company. And when Moses leave, they push 5 pounds in his hand and say, that was a jolly good show. That is life. That is London. Oh, Lord, Galahad say, when the sweetness of summer get in him. He would never leave the old Britain as long as he live. And Moses sigh a long sigh, like a man who live life and see nothing at all in it, and who frightened. As the years go by, wondering what it is all about. One Saturday, Moses' friend Harris was giving a dance in St. Pancras Hall. He is a fella who liked to play la-di-da. He liked English customs and thing. Harris moving among the big shots because of the work he does do, which is to organize little fetes like dance and party and so on. And when he dress, bowler and umbrella, and briefcase tucked under the arm, with the Times fold up in the pocket so the name show. Only thing, Harris face black. On the Saturday of the fete, there Harris is, standing up by the door in black suit and bow tie, greeting all the English people with a pleasant good evening and how do you do, and a not so pleasant greeting for the boys. For if one thing he afraid is that the boys make rab and turn the dance into a brawl. Moses arrives. Behind him, Tolroy appear with an English chick, and after him, Ma and Tanti.
Harris! Tanti scream out. You don't remember neighbor who used to live behind you in George Street?
I'm afraid, Harris start to stammer.
But look how big the boy get,
Tanti bawl.
When I hear that is you, little Harris, who used to run about the barrack yard in shirt tail, who given this fate, I say, I must come and see you. Ma, look at little Harris, how big he get.
Yes, yes, I remember you, Harris say quickly, giving Tanti a push. But Tanti didn't budge.
Don't push,
she say.
Have some respect for your elders. I'm not going to dance until you come inside. I want the first set with you. It still have some life in the old hen. Inside the hall was a real jam session. The girls stand up in groups here and there, and the boys liming out by the bar. And Moses, as usual, like a minor master of ceremonies with the boys, giving them ballad as they coast a drink. All you see that? Moses say, look, Tolroy bring the whole family to Harry's fate. Oh God, what it coming to now? Tolroy! And when Tolroy come, all the boys begin to give him tone. What happened? You couldn't leave the old lady home? You think this is Jamaica? You bring an old hen to dance? All this time, the steel band blasting some hot numbers and Harris moving about the crowd, saying hello to everybody. It really looked like he have some white laddie da there, for it have four of them sitting at a table in the corner drinking, but none of them dancing. Harris make his way to the table. How you getting on? Ask one of the young women, like an attendant when you're trying on a new pair of shoes. He feel it was up to him to ask the thing to dance, seeing like they look shy to take the floor. She hem a little, then she get up. Now, all this time, Tanti was looking for Harris. And when he take the floor with the sharp thing, Tanti get up and push away dancers as she advanced to Harris. My boy, she say, putting her hand on his shoulder. I've been looking for you all over. What happened? You're avoiding the old lady, eh? Too much young girl here to bother with Tanti, eh? Harris say, will you kindly wait until I'm finished? We shall dance the next set. You're too smart. When the next set come, I wouldn't find you. Tanti say, tell this girl to unlace you. These English girls don't know how to dance calypso, man. Lady, excuse him. And before Harris know what happening, Tanti swing him in the center of the floor, swinging she fat bottom, left and right. It had a fella there called 5 past 12. A Tess look at him one day. Boy, you black like midnight. Then, after a second look, no, you more like 5 past 12. 5 was real high. A look in his eyes as if he's seeing things men does only see in their dreams. But he was quick enough to see the white girl standing up there helpless while Tanti take Harris away. Before the girl had time to make her way back to the table, she was in 5's arms and he was close hauling this number like if the band playing a slow sentimental fox instead of fan me saga boy fan me. Half the boys saying, look how Tanti have Harris. And the other half saying, look at the old 5 beating close to the wind with Harris' girl. Afterwards, 5 went over to Moses and Galahad, who talk at the bar. Soon, Harris joined them as if nothing happened and order a drink. Harris worry about 5 smoking weed and make rab. When the fete finish and the band playing God Save the Queen, Harris say, forgetting to speak proper English for a minute, some of you have a habit of walking about as if the fete's still going on. The English people will say we are still uncivilized and don't know how to behave properly. So please, boys, do me a favor. Remember, when the band play God Save the Queen, stand up to attention. Nearly every Sunday morning, like if they're going to church, the boys liming in Moses' room, coming together like if it's confession, sitting down on the bed, on the floor, on the chairs, everybody asking, what happening? Laughing, asking Moses if he have anything to eat, the gas going low, and everybody turning out their pockets for this shilling that would mean the difference between shivering and feeling warm. Until conscience hit one of them and he say, Apps, look, I have a shilling. It was right down in the bottom of my trouser pocket. Sometimes, listening to them, he look in each face and he feel a great compassion for every one of them, as if he live each of their lives one by one and all the strain and stress come to rest on his shoulders. Sometimes, after they're gone, he hear their voices ringing in his ear and sometimes tears come to his eyes and he don't know why, really. If it's homesickness or if it's just that life in general beginning to get too hard. 10 years, the old man in Britain, and what to show for it? What happened
during all that time, from winter to winter, summer to summer, work after work, sleep, eat, hustle pussy, work, and a look come in his face that bring all the years of suffering to light. London is a lonely, miserable city. Nobody does really accept you. I want to go back to Trinidad and lay down in the sun and dig my toes and eat a fish broth and go Maracas Bay and talk to them fishermen. And all day long, I'm sleeping under a tree with just the old sun for company. Every year, he vowing to go back. But after the winter and then the old sun shining, it's as if life start all over again. I will wait until after the summer. The summer does really be hot. But he know it reached that stage where he gets so accustomed to the pattern that he can't do anything about it. He used to wonder about back home, where he have a grandmother and a girlfriend who always writing him why he don't come back, that they would go and live in Grenada where her father have a big estate. Why you don't go back to Trinidad? What happening, man? What happening? One night, liming on the embankment near to Chelsea, Moses stand up on the bank of the river, watching the lights of the buildings reflecting in the water, thinking he should try to make it back by next year before he changes mind again. Under the kif-kif laughter, behind the ballad and the episode, the what happening, the summer is hot, he could see a great aimlessness, a great restless, swaying movement that leaving you standing in the same spot, as if a forlorn shadow of doom fall on all the spades in the country, as if, on the surface, things don't look so bad. But when you go down a little, you bounce up a kind of misery and pathos and a frightening what? He don't know the right word, but he have the right feeling in his heart, as if the boy's laughing, but they only laughing because they're afraid to cry. They only laughing because to think so much about everything would be a big calamity. Like how he here now, the thought so heavy, like he unable to move his body. Still, it have a greatness and a vastness in the way he was feeling tonight, like it was something solid after feeling everything else give way. And though he ain't getting no happiness out of the cogitations, he's still pondering, for it's the first time that he ever find himself thinking like that. One of the boys was telling him how over in France, all kinds of fellas writing books were turning out to be bestsellers. Taxi driver, porter, road sweeper, it didn't matter. One day you're sweating in the factory, and the next day, all the newspapers have your name and photo, saying how you are a new literary giant. He watched a tugboat on the Thames, wondering if he could ever write a book like that, what everybody would buy. It was a summer night. Laughter fell softly. It was the sort of night that if you wasn't making love to a woman, you feel you was the only person in the world like that.